Some of you people might remember the Fifth Dimension, the name of a group who sang in the 60s and 70s, and they had a hit song in 1969 called The Wedding Bell Blues, and that's essentially the name of my sermon today, The Wedding Bell Blues. And if you remember it, the singer Marilyn McCoo sang the following. Bill, I love you so, I always will. I look at you and see the passion eyes of May. Oh, but am I ever gonna see my wedding day? I was on your side, Bill, when you were losing. I never scheme or lie, Bill, there's been no fooling. But kisses and love won't carry me till you marry me, Bill. I've got the wedding bell blues. See, some of you remember it. It depends on how old you are, really, and we're not going to talk about that, but... Wedding Bell Blues, all she wanted in the song was to be able to get married. And marriage, according to E.J. Groff, is when you agree to spend the rest of your life sleeping in a room that's too cold beside someone else who is sleeping in the same room who is too warm. Now, Ogden Nash wrote a poem where he said, to keep your marriage brimming with love in the loving cup. Whenever you're wrong, admit it. And whenever you're right, shut up. A writer named Helen Rowland said, marriage is like twirling a baton, turning handsprings, or eating with chopsticks. It looks easy until you do it. And there's a lot of laughter here because many of you are married or have been married, and you know that these things tend to be true. My husband and I have had more issues over climate control in our life than you can imagine. He's the one who's hot and I'm the one who's cold. Now, if I were to ask some of you about your wedding day, I bet you I would hear some interesting stories. If I asked you about your marriage, I would hear even more interesting stories. There was a certain gentleman who found out that his wife, he realized that his wife was going through a bout of depression, and he wanted to be able to show her how much he loved her, so he planned a special night out. And when he finished his job at the factory, he showered while he was there, and he'd taken along a change of clothes, and he splashed on some cologne, and he had some flowers for her. And when he arrived home, instead of going through the back door like usual, he rang the front doorbell. And his wife answered, and she looked at him holding the flowers, and she said, oh no, this has been a terrible day. First I had to take Billy to the ER to get stitches, and then your mother called and she said she's coming to stay for 2 weeks, and then the washing machine broke, and now you've come home drunk. In his book, Hustling God, Reverend Dr. Craig Barnes tells about a certain wedding at which he officiated that started off as a real disaster. The weather was atrocious, and it had rained so much that there was flooding on some of the streets in the town, and people weren't able to get through, some of them, to even get to the ceremony. And for some reason, only half the candles on the candelabra that they had set up would light. And the flowers did not arrive. Maybe it had something to do with the flooding. So they had a wedding hostess at this particular church, and she tried to put together some flowers from things that had been left over from a funeral earlier in the week, but they had a lovely brown tinge around the edge of them. So it was really unbelievable when the florist actually arrived with the flowers, and undaunted, even though the ceremony was already going on, she marched right down that center aisle and started to arrange the flowers right there in front of the bride and the groom and all the soggy guests. So Pastor Barnes wisely made some adjustments in his wedding meditation, and said to them, talked about how fitting it was to have an imperfect wedding day, because marriage itself is something that is always imperfect. But he could tell by their faces that they still had such anger in them, because they had worked and they had planned for so long for this day, and it had turned out like this. Nevertheless, the moment came when the bride and the groom faced each other to say their vows. And then he said everything changed. The groom's eyes watered up with tears of joy, as if he was seeing for the first time, even through mishap after mishap, the joy that was before him, the woman that he was soon to marry. And all of his frustration melted away as he finally beheld her, and he began to weep, and she began to weep, and Pastor Barnes said, I began to weep, and everything was changed. There's something about a wedding, whether between a man and a woman and a woman, a man and a man these days, there's something about a wedding that brings such joy to people, new hopes, new beginnings. Throughout the Bible, the relationship which God has with God's people is compared to that of the kind of love that a bridegroom has for a bride. Now, God is the bridegroom, and Israel is the bride, and then this is carried over in the New Testament to Christ being the bridegroom and the church being the bride. The prophet of 3rd Isaiah is speaking to Israel in the midst of this crisis that I described before reading the lesson, that they've come back to Jerusalem and it's a mess, and they've made an attempt to try to rebuild the temple, but nothing's going well. And they've been here, been back for maybe 10 years at this point. The temple has not been built. The crops are failing. Things are not in a good way. And the people are wondering, has God abandoned us? And they likened their name to forsaken, desolate, rejected, and ruined. This is the names that the prophet gives to them. And then the prophets, before this particular prophet, said, it's your own fault, people. You had empty sacrifices when you came to the temple because you didn't follow them up with acts of justice and mercy to people. You didn't take care of the poor. You didn't take care of widows that were totally on their own. In your courtrooms, there was not justice done. People could buy the judge's verdict. So, and also the prophet said, you followed the laws, and there were 600 some laws at this point, all for show, without any real conviction behind it. But behind all of that was that the prophet said, you did not act as a light for the world. Because do you remember when God formed the people of Israel, it was with the intention, said to Abraham, that through you and your descendants, all nations will be blessed. All nations will eventually say, wow, why are these people different than everybody else? And they'll say, well, it's our God. And everybody would want to know, why is there love and mercy and grace among these people in a different way than what we've ever known? But they haven't been doing it. They did not act as a loyal bride for God. So they received other names, self-centered, haughty, lazy, drunken, self-pampering, self-righteous. Their marriage was not good. In fact, at this point, it didn't seem like it was even happening at all. So imagine God singing the wedding bell blues to them, saying, Israel, I love you so, I always will. I look at you and see the passion eyes of May. Oh, but am I ever gonna see my wedding day? I was on your side, Jews, when you were losing. I've never schemed or lied. There's been no fooling. Sacrifice and law won't carry me till you marry me, Israel. God says, I love you so, I always will. And your voice I hear, a choir of carousels. Oh, but am I ever gonna hear our wedding bells? I was the one who came running when you were in slavery. I haven't lived one day not loving you truly. Sacrifice and law won't carry me till you marry me, Israel. I've got the wedding bell blues. Can you imagine God's heart breaking? Because the people do not want to enter into this covenant. A covenant, and that's what marriage is promises made between spouses for lifelong fidelity and loyalty, and someone to honor your existence and observe your life and be there for you in all times. And the people don't want to enter into this wonderful opportunity. They have neglected and forgotten their special calling. But God was the one who always remained faithful. And the word married is the most important word in this, because a single woman in ancient times was considered a disgrace. She would have brought shame on her family because nobody ever wanted to marry her. If her father died and she was left with no brothers to care for her, she was left in poverty. The same happened to a widow. If a widow had no one to care for her, she also lived in abject poverty, and many of these women had no choice but to support themselves through prostitution. So to be called married, wow, that meant security. That meant prosperity. It meant life. And that's what God is offering to the people. At this point, you're thinking, well, what does this have to do with us? 2,500 years later. Well, have you ever felt abandoned? Have you called yourself desolate or ruined or rejected? Sometimes it's just life circumstances that have brought it, those kind of feelings to you. And other times it's because of something you did, a mistake, a bad decision, even an outright sin. And this passage tells us that as individuals and as a people of God, that despite the reality that we do not live up to our potential, God says, you are the light of the world. I have made you so. You are my beloved. Christ the bridegroom speaks to the church and says that I invite you to the heavenly banquet. And when we received Holy Communion a few moments ago, that's considered a foretaste of the feast to come. Just a little bit of a glimpse of what God has in store for us in eternity. And we get to experience it now through following God's call. Come, I'm going to be loyal. I invite you to be in that special relationship of marriage with me. There was a certain couple who had their golden wedding anniversary party. That's 50 years. And at one point, the party quieted down and people were talking to the couple, asking questions about their life together and hearing some fun stories of what had happened to them through the decades. And then somebody said, what's the secret of your long and happy marriage? And the mother, the wife, said, well, on my wedding day, I decided to choose 10 of my husband's faults, which for the sake of our marriage, I would overlook. And a guest immediately said, well, can you tell us what the 10 are? And she said, well, to tell you the truth, I never got around to writing them down. But whenever he did something that made me hopping mad, I said, lucky for him, that's one of the 10. God looks at us. And whenever we do something that makes God hopping mad, God says, lucky for them, that's one of the thousands. I love you so, I always will. Amen.